An ancient Indian chief stood by the magnificent heights of a roaring waterfall, put his bronzed hand on the shoulder of a buff and blue uniformed officer of the American Continental Army, and made this prophecy.
Nations shall behold him and sing his praises. Yet when he soar highest, his fall will be most certain. When his wings brush the sky, then the arrow will pierce his heart.
He was speaking of General Benedict Arnold.
Transcribed from Greenville, South Carolina, Bob Jones University presents Miracles.
Was 1776.
A small group of colonists declared their independence from the world's most powerful nation, Great Britain.
It was a grim year for the Americans' cause.
In fact, the cause looked hopeless. Our revolutionary officers were outgeneraled, outmanned, and their tactics outdated.
But we were not outheroed.
While the colonies were beginning the business of war,
a young man,
Benedict Arnold by name, was plying his trade. At 21, he had his own pharmacy and bookstore.
Yes, business is good here in New Haven. I have the best balms and fever powders in Massachusetts. If you want to do some reading, friend, I have stock in Greek and Latin grammars. No? Perhaps Plutarch, Rousseau. Still no. Then I have just the thing. The latest novel from London.
But a quiet college town offered little challenge for a man of Arnold's temperament. At 26, he left the store in his sister's charge and went into the West Indies trade.
He lived the life of an adventurer. He whipped an informer at the public whipping post in New Haven.
At the Bay of Honduras, he fought one duel with pistols, another with swords. But at the news that colonial citizens had been killed in the streets of Boston at the Boston Massacre, he wrote from Jamaica,
"Are Americans all asleep and tame? Giving up their glorious liberties? Or are they all turned philosophers if they do not take immediate vengeance on such miscreants?"
At last he had found a cause worthy of his energy. He loved the dramatic, the picture book image of a hero, the stage on which he could play a leading role and gain the applause and approbation his soul cried for.
He became a soldier and marched under the motto,
"He who brought us hither will support us."
In the spring of 1775...
Why? Why is my plan so preposterous? Fort Ticonderoga is the royal arsenal on the east shore of Lake Champlain. Let me go. Give me command of some men, and I'll take Ticonderoga and Crown Point.
His audacity impressed the Massachusetts Assembly. It would be the first open act of war against the mother country.
They made him colonel and authorized him to command 400 troops and attack the fort at Ticonderoga.
But Arnold had to share the glory. Unable to raise enough troops, he was forced to join Ethan Allen and the wild Vermont Green Mountain Boys.
With 83 men, they took Ticonderoga.
It's a good victory. Look at these supplies. 120 cannon, 50 swivels, 10 tons of musket balls. We'll send their own musket balls back at them.
They sailed to St. John's and took the garrison. They had captured the keys to Canada, the control of Lake George and Champlain. And now, Arnold is a national hero.
But a hero with a bitter heart.
Thank you for your expression of sympathy. My lovely Margaret died when I was on campaign. She was 30. My sister Hannah has taken my 3 sons to rear. If that were not enough, my character has been injured by report of my having used goods seized in campaigns for my own profit. I cannot but think it extremely cruel when I have sacrificed my time and a great part of my private property for the cause of the revolution.
In July, he persuaded the newly appointed General George Washington to allow him to plan a surprise attack on the fortress at Quebec.
Washington put Arnold in charge of an overland expedition, and another force under Brigadier General Richard Montgomery set out for Montreal by the way of the Hudson. It was one of the hardest marches in the annals of warfare.
Arnold had 1,100 men. They were keen-eyed riflemen, each with deadly marksmanship. They were hempen frocks, fur caps, bemoccasined sons of the American wilderness, and each carried a 20-pound rifle and tomahawk.
The march took 6 weeks.
They plodded through bog and marsh grass. They carried 200 boats loaded with arms and supplies, past innumerable rapids and falls and agonizing portages. They pushed through forests,
waded through boiling boulder-cast rivers.
They fought fog, snow, floods.
My men are boiling their shoes and leather breeches. They are even chewing their cartridge pouches. I lost 500 men on a march of 400 miles.
They camped near the village of St. Rochelle.
Arnold wrote Washington,
"We need 2,500 men to take Quebec."
But when Montgomery reached them from the northern route, they attacked the fort.
They climbed scaling ladders and climbed the stone walls and attacked the town. Montgomery was killed.
Arnold was severely wounded in the left leg. Through the bitter winter months, he pled with Congress.
"I must have supplies and reinforcements. I have no thought of leaving this proud town until I first enter it in triumph."
But Congress could not agree to the wisdom of breaking from the mother country. And besides,
Burgoyne was on his way across the Atlantic with an army of 10,000.
"So, for the lack of provisions and support, I have lost Canada. I wonder if one day my country will regret it."
So we lost our chance to add a great new province to America. In June, Burgoyne was sailing up the St. Lawrence.
Arnold prepared to retreat. He forced the merchants of Montreal to supply his battered men.
At St. John's, Arnold put the last of his men into canoes and waited to see the Royal Grenadiers approach. He shot his horse and pushed off from the shore. He was the first to enter Canada and the last to leave. Now Arnold does one deed that may have saved the revolution for the colonies.
While Congress debated for the next 6 weeks, Arnold and his tattered army were on the lower end of Lake Champlain, trying to build a flotilla against the enemy.
He fought against hopeless odds, but it forced the British to stop and concentrate on shipping.
In the end, he burned his own boats and escaped.
But he had delayed the British until winter. He had given Washington's army a year's reprieve. Then came Saratoga.
Arnold, under command of a man he detested, disagreed with his superior's leadership.
"Gates, the camps are filled with restless men. They want action. Go on the offensive. Don't just sit here, hoping to starve the enemy out by cutting supply lines."
Gates ignored him and settled into wait. While waiting, two enemy forces were about to join 30 miles from their position and cut them off.
It was then that Arnold, without authority, spearheaded an attack.
Gates was furious.
Sheltered by good cover, Gates wanted to stay on the defensive.
But on October 7th, with Burgoyne advancing,
"No man will keep me in my tent today."
Without command, without the right to give orders,
"Come on, lads, follow me."
They moved from the fur-covered slopes into open fields.
Arnold's voice rang loud and clear.
"Victory or death!"
And somehow, in spite of all the rules of war, they won. Then it happened.
Arnold's horse was killed. In his death agony, he reared and crashed to the ground, pinning Arnold's leg under him. After his rescue, Arnold remarked,
"I can bear the pain, but the thought of being a cripple. I met an old Indian on the way to Quebec. He was a chief. He stood by the waterfalls and said, 'The dark eagle shall soar to the sun, and the nation shall sing his praises. But when he soars the highest, an arrow shall pierce his breast.'"
The The morale of our struggling nation was struck a staggering blow when America's first revolutionary hero, Benedict Arnold, dressed in black and carrying a hooded lantern, waited at the foot of Long Clove Mountain.
A figure clambered over the soaked rocks.
You are Sir Henry's Adjutant General. I am in command of West Point. The papers I have here should satisfy you to my sincerity. A report on the garrison. Returns of ordnance. Battle order in case of alarm. A report on the last council of war. A map of the fortifications. For the risk involved, I want £20,000 sterling and equal rank in the British Army.
It was pure chance that Arnold's plot was discovered when papers in his handwriting were found in the boots of a spy.
Arnold fled to New York to join the British and spent the rest of the war fighting his own people.
There are three monuments in our country that proclaim not the glory of achievement, but the tragic paradox of failure.
Not far from the Saratoga battleground stands a stately shaft of Cape Ann granite. In the shaft are niches commemorating the heroes of that battle, Gates, Schuyler, and Morgan.
The south niche is empty. It was meant for Benedict Arnold. At West Point, in the old cadet chapel, the roster of revolutionary heroes has been defaced by a cadet's penknife. Arnold's name has long been scratched away.
The most tragic monument of all is a tombstone at Saratoga. It is nameless and bears a carving of a man's left leg.
When Benedict Arnold donned a uniform as a general in the Continental Army, he also accepted the responsibilities of that position. The tragic, nameless little tombstone commemorates the one part of himself he gave to his cause. His left leg was wounded in the service of the country he betrayed. Should our Heavenly Father erect a memorial to our contribution to his kingdom, what would be the image on the stone? A pocketbook representing a few dollars contribution, or a clock signifying a few hours in services on Sunday. On Christ's heavenly roster, may our names be proudly inscribed, followed by the inscription, "He gave his all, hero of the faith." Those appearing in today's drama were Bob Pratt, Ronald Van Dorn, and Dave Yerrick. Sound and musical effects were handled by Paul Litley, Dave Crispin, and Jim Martin. Recording engineer was Corbin Tabor. Miracles was written by Doris Harris and directed by Laura Pratt. This is Bob Verzal. Miracles is a transcribed Bob Jones University production.